26. Taff provides a favour. The claw-footed bathtub sat in the centre of the room like a luxurious throne, a pedestal gas lamp at its foot. Modo locked the door, then ran the water. He undressed and glared at his crooked body. His arms and chest were dotted with bruises, and he had dark marks under his eyes. He badly needed sleep, and a proper meal, too. Last night he had been in the Tower of London, the night before that in a burning house that had left him wheezing still. He lowered himself into the hot water. He had never bathed in running water before. At Ravenscroft, Mrs. Finchley would bring the kettle from the stove and pour the water into a small aluminium tub. All he had to do now was turn a tap. Mr. Socrates had always had the best of everything. While all his years at Ravenscroft, Modo was left to freeze throughout the winter. Immediately, Modo regretted his anger. For all he knew, Mr. Socrates could be dead or lying injured in a cold cellar somewhere. He scrubbed at his skin, wishing he could wash away the hump from his back, the mottled skin from his arms. He floated, feeling as though the hot water were warming his very soul. If only he could sleep here. He glanced at the clock on the mantel, surprised it was only 1:30 in the afternoon. So much had happened since he first opened his eyes this morning. After drying off, he looked in the mirror on the vanity table. His lip had swollen. His nose was putty. He worked very hard to make his face revert to its knightly form, but the heat had relaxed his tired muscles and he had no energy. Not now, he thought. He slammed his fist on the table, rattling a jar of fancy combs. He threw on Mr. Socrates' oversized bathrobe and wrapped a towel around his face in the manner of an Egyptian mummy, leaving a slit for his eyes. He listened at the door, even though Octavia was taking her bath downstairs in the servants' quarters. Hearing nothing, he opened the door a crack and looked down the empty hall. The moment he stepped out, the floor creaked.
"A bit more haste would be appreciated,"
Octavia shouted, and Modo nearly jumped out of his skin.
"Yes, yes,"
he shouted back. Once he'd ascertained that she was actually downstairs, he darted across the hall into the largest room. To his great happiness, he discovered it was Mr. Socrates. He quickly went through the closet and pulled out one of Mr. Socrates' suits. The shirt and jacket were a little too tight and pressed against his hump, and he had to take a pair of scissors to the legs of the trousers to shorten them, but, by and large, he looked quite smashing. He hoped his master would forgive the necessary alterations. He went back to the closet and selected a heavy black cloak with a large hood. He stopped to stare at his face in the small mirror. It was growing more disfigured by the minute. And then he saw something sitting on a bureau just beyond the vanity table that surprised and delighted him. On a wooden stand was a flesh-coloured mask he had worn a few years earlier. He touched it lightly. What did it mean? Was Mr. Socrates so proud of him that he kept this memento with all his most personal belongings? Or was he perhaps just proud of his ability to mould young people to his will? Next to the mask was a portrait of a woman wearing a red dress. Was Mr. Socrates married? He found it impossible to imagine. Yet here was a woman, and beside her a dried rose, and a bracelet small enough for a baby. For a moment Modo allowed himself to imagine it had been his own bracelet. Modo picked up the mask and was surprised that it still fit, though perhaps a little too snugly. He opened a drawer and found a pair of thin kid gloves and a belt with pouches, each pouch holding a different item: a small knife, a pocket lucifer, a wire with a small hook, and a fountain pen. He was about to push the unusual button on the pen, but decided against it in case it sprayed ink. He buckled the belt under the suit jacket, checked his mask in the mirror, tightened the cloak's hood, and pulled on the gloves. He was exhausted, but made his way back to the bathroom and found the torn piece of paper with Dr. Hyde's writing on it. He tucked it in a pocket and went to the front door, where Octavia was waiting. Her hair was still damp, and she was tying it back.
"You're wearing a disguise again, I see. A bout of shyness?"
"No, the rash is worse, that's all."
"You're a very odd man, Modo. And you seem shorter."
Modo stood up as tall as he could.
"Well, that's better,"
she said, and stopped fussing with her hair.
"While you've been playing dress-up, I've come up with a plan. But first we must hurry down to Berkeley for a cab. No time to talk now."
They arrived on Berkeley Street, breathless, and Octavia hailed a cab. She gave the driver an address near Seven Dials.
"Why there?" Modo asked. "At other times, when needed, I have relied on contacts from my old life."
"Your old life?"
"My time as a pickpocket and grifter."
"And you still have dealings with these thieves?" Modo blurted out.
"Why are you so judgmental?"
"I'm not judgmental." This prompted a snort from Octavia.
"Who did you play with to make you behave this way?" she asked.
"I didn't play. I never left the house."
"You never left the house? Ever?"
"Not until 6 months ago." She actually looked concerned, maybe even sad.
"That's terribly cruel."
"No, no. Mr. Socrates was training me to be an agent."
"How many years were you there?"
13.
13 years?
Her eyes flashed.
"He saved me,"
Modo said weakly. But he knew she was right, at least in part. It was where his own anger was rooted. There was so much more he would have learned had he been allowed to live a real life.
"Saved you from what, Modo?"
Of course, he couldn't tell her that. Mr. Socrates had told him that he was such a deformed child that the orphanage had sold him to gypsies, and they had profited from displaying his ugliness in a travelling grotesqueries show.
"He just did. You must believe me." "He's not much better than this Dr. Hyde, then. Mr. Socrates is kind to you and to me."
"For his own purposes, yes."
"No, he...
And Modo nearly said the words, "loves me." But he had no way of knowing that.
"This is confounding you, Modo.
I'm sorry, but I do like to speak my mind. It would be best if you got used to it." He glared at her, but he didn't imagine she could measure his anger through the mask. The way she sat with her back so straight, her face so haughty, infuriated him. How dare she speak of Mr. Socrates that way, after all the master had done for her? For him. For Britain.
"Are you done sulking?" she asked, as the hansom cab pulled to a stop. "If not, you can stay in here."
She climbed out and paid the driver. Modo leapt down from his side. Octavia had already gone on ahead, crowds of muffin men and vagabonds closing in around her. It was mid-afternoon, and they hoped to sell their wares to sailors and other workers going to or coming from the docks. Modo snapped his head to the left and right, searching for Octavia, his heart beating wildly. He glanced at the nearest rooftop, every nerve shouting for him to flee the hordes. He'd been in this section of St. Giles before, but always on a rooftop. People jostled him. Someone's elbow nearly knocked his mask off. Then, through a break in the crowd, he spotted Octavia striding away from him. Modo ran for a breathless minute and caught up with her.
"Don't dawdle," she said. "Don't walk so fast."
She stopped in front of a child, his unkempt hair the colour of coal, his shirt more holes than thread. The boy's eyes darted back and forth between Modo and Octavia.
"Take me to Taff," she said.
"Taff ain't just seeing nobody," he replied.
"You wait here. I'll ask him about an audience."
He darted off, slipping into the crowd like a weasel into a hole, and came back a few minutes later with an older boy who said,
"Mr. Taff will see you now."
The older child led the three of them down a narrow alley. They passed doors crowded with half-crazed-looking men, thin and pale.
"Opium dens,"
Octavia said matter-of-factly. Modo had heard about those places. Men smoked the substance and it turned them into monsters. That was how Mrs. Finchley had explained it to Modo. The boys led them into an ancient lodging house. The timbers had shifted so that the frame was at a precarious angle, and the rotted door swung on one hinge. Inside were several tables. An old man sat at one of them. At the sight of Octavia, he stood and walked toward her, every second step thumping loudly on the slatted floor. When he got around the table, Modo could see that he had a wooden leg. He held a mug that sloshed with beer.
Old Taff thought it were a lady come to visit.
The man had a grey-black beard and fiery eyes.
But it's just my dear old Octavia. And look at you, all fancied up and aristocratic, I see. And who's his lordship beside her?
My companion's name is Modo.
Oh, and listen to you, speaking all refined and like that. Who you calling friend these days, I wonder?
Octavia rolled her eyes.
Oh, I know, I know,
Taff continued.
The word is you keep interesting company these days, including this man. Pray tell, why the mask?
Octavia replied before Modo had a chance.
He's a frowner. It makes his face look rather nasty.
Modo stiffened. Taff nodded, gave Modo a wink.
I should wear a mask, too. Me figurehead ain't so pleasant. Neither is the rest of me.
He tapped his wooden leg and chortled.
Suppose you're wondering where my good leg went. Well, lad, it's shark food. Lost it to a cannonball in service of Her Majesty. A crying shame. Me boys are me legs now.
He took a chug from his beer.
Well, Octavia, as always, old Taff is happy to see you. None of these scabs could match your skill. You'll be looking for employment, then?
She laughed lightly.
It's wisest to leave that business once one reaches hanging age.
Garrett taught me that.
Taff nodded.
His death still makes me heart heavy. I miss that lad.
Yes, and well you should,
she said, rather coldly.
I've come for a favour.
A favour?
Taff rubbed his hands together.
Yes, I so enjoy providing favours.
I need you to tell me what you know about the missing children.
The inspectors don't want me to talk about it, but me business is hurting. I've lost several of me mob already.
Did you ever find any of them again?
One boy, Willie, and he told tales of labouring under the ground in tunnels. Then he went yellow and died. I think his inside stopped working.
Modo imagined Oppy dying the same hideous way.
"Who's behind the kidnappings?" he asked.
"Oh, so he speaks, does he?"
Taff said with a sneer.
"Yes, and he asked an important question,"
Octavia said.
"The papers are wrong. The number of urchins who've disappeared is much higher. None of my riff-raffle work at night any more. I can't say I blames him. I'd go myself, but for this gimp leg. Lost it to a cannonball, you know."
"You mentioned that," Modo said.
"Did I? Must be going balmy, eh?"
"Where did you find that boy, Willie?"
Octavia asked.
"The other boys found him near a boarded-up train tunnel entrance on Fleet Lane, close to the public, if you gets me meaning."
"I do," Octavia said.
"And that will be one favour owed."
There was a gruffness in his voice and a sly glint in his eye.
"I shall remember that, Octavia."